So, again, in four dimensions, while talking to people during this break, I realized we also tend to mix folklore with facts, right? Sometimes it gets said over and over again, and then you think that must be right. So one of the examples is that we think in four dimensions that there is only one QCD. And if you can, you can put any action you want when you take the continuum limit, the theory is unique. But maybe not, I don't know. But certain assumptions I make, partly because of being in the field so long, I've been brainwashed. And that's the way it is, right? Okay, so how am I going to do a continuum theory, right? So the continuum theory that I want to do looks like this. I am going to say there is an action which depends upon you, right? And I'm not saying what that action is. It has, of course, fermions in it, gauge fields in it. It has only one parameter for me, right? This is a parameter on the lattice, and this is defined on an L to the fourth lattice, right? Let me focus on this itself, on the overlap Dirac operator itself. On the overlap Dirac operator, these guys, because they are the propagator, will have eigenvalues of the type I lambda I inverse. Let me put I lambda j inverse, right? I lambda j inverse, where j goes from, where j goes from 0, 1, up to, I don't know, something like 2n L to the 4th, so that you've counted everything. And then I'm also assuming that 0 is less than lambda 0 is less than lambda 1 and so on. So I've ordered it perfectly, right? Once I've ordered it perfectly, I can ask that lambda 1 g as a function of L. So how did I write this in my notes? So I call this capital lambda to say this is on the lattice. Okay. So I decided to call that capital lambda, which is on the lattice. And so this capital lambda, which is on the lattice, right? And then because, so this is where you see, for me, the existence of a continuum theory before I do the calculation, I know from perturbation theory, I know that if I multiply this by L because of the naive dimension of the lattice eigenvalue, I can keep this fixed. So I can keep this fixed at lambda 1, right? Now, I'm not claiming anything about the spectrum of the theory. The spectrum of the theory could have a massive spectrum, or it could be scale invariant, right? I know how g of L behaves. And g of L has to behave in such a way that when limit L going to infinite, g of L goes to 0. I will find this if I do a calculation. In addition, I will also find if I take lambda j, g of L with the same g of L put in here, this will go to lambda j and they will be finite as limit L going to infinity. Okay? So this will be the spectrum of the gauge invariant spectrum of the massless Dirac operator in the continuum limit. I can just do the calculation and get it. Right? But now the question is, what did I fix this to? Did I fix it to 1? Did I fix it to 0.1? Did I fix it to 10 to the minus 5? Depending upon, yeah, Silesh.
So this lambda was the eigenvalue of
this guy. I picked this guy. I could have also picked this guy. It doesn't matter. It's easier to think of this guy because this is an anti-Hermitian operator.
I'm still understanding the dimensions of that. So why can't it have any anomalous dimension?
I'm going to get to it. But this is a lattice. That's exactly right. I'll get to the anomalous dimensions.
Okay.
Right? But for me, it is just a lattice spectrum. This is a lattice Dirac operator.
Yeah, that's why you don't know. Why should it be L times that to be fixed? Why can't it be L to the P?
L to the P, yeah. Right? It can be. But I know secretly from doing ordinary perturbation theory that if I do this and I keep this fixed, I will get the correct, I don't want to call it beta function because that's a thing that everybody says, but there is no such thing as the beta function as my dear collaborator Herbert has told me many, many times, right? So it's just how the lattice coupling changes with capital L.
I guess. I think the point is that in perturbation theory, you know exactly what it's supposed to be, and the fixed point is that it's perturbative. Somehow.
And that I know.
Yeah.
This is what you were alluding to yesterday, yeah. Too. This we know the way we think about it. But if there is time, I'll talk about a theory where we don't know that. Okay? So then you see, so the limit of this is finite. Now I can ask, what does it mean to keep this fixed, right? What it means to keep it fixed is to say that my choice of lambda 1 defines my box size. Yeah? What I pick for lambda 1 tells me what the box size is, right? And so what I can then do is, I can now say, instead of doing GL, right? So I need to erase something now, but not everything, right? So let me erase this part alone. Instead of doing this, I can sort of say that I take G now of some number times L, right? Then I can again take lambda J L, limit L going to infinite, and I'm going to get lambda J now of L. These are all, you know, if you're thinking about a lattice calculation, you can ask things like, can L be continuous and things like that. But let's not question technical details, right? So I'm assuming that there is a function G of L, I've assumed is a continuous function that I've obtained from my lattice calculation. And I just put in a parameter little l in front of that function. And I calculate L going to infinite, and then I will get lambda J of L. Yeah. Now I have lambda j as a function of L, which is essentially the dimensionless box size. What we know is that if L goes to 0, lambda j of L will go like 1 over L. That I know. Yeah? It's the free spectrum, right? very, very small box size. It'll be just the free theory. It'll be purely perturbative, and you will get the perturbative spectrum, which is just lambda. But the question is, I now know what happens when L goes to infinity. You see, in this method of doing, I have not done any correlation function. I don't worry about two scales, ever. I don't have to say, compute the correlation length at a certain size, which is bigger than the lattice spacing, but smaller than the L. None of that matters. I only have one number, and I'm studying that number as a function of L. Yeah? So single scale, right? And then I can ask what happens when L goes to infinity. Now I will find that lambda j of L is proportional to 1 over L to the 1 plus gamma m, right? Okay, what I mean by that is, asymptotically it does that. So somehow, the UV physics will smoothly go into the IR physics. Yeah? And that's then what we call as the anomalous dimension. So it's a calculation that can be done without bias, without knowing a priori the spectrum of the theory. Yeah? And the conclusion will be, if gamma m is between 0 and 3, we will say it is scale invariant. And if gamma m equal to 3, we will say there is a condensate. Okay? Yeah. Sorry? Well, I find how it scales for large L, and I define that as the anomalous dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I want to talk about it in terms of the continuum field theory or conformal field theory, which operator has this?
Yeah, so the operator would, of course, correspond to the scalar psi bar psi, because I was talking about the fermion eigenvalues, right? So I'm just talking about the spectral representation of psi bar psi here, right? So, in answer to your question, psi bar psi is 1 over lambda I, right? Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's between below 3 and above 3, then?
Above 3, I don't know what it means. I think at 3, it breaks scale.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, can I interpret this as saying, if I consider the two-point correlation function of psi bar psi, then as a function of their separation, is 1 over r to that point?
Right. But there you see, you're going to have a little bit of trouble, right? So, if I take a scalar function, I'm going to have an x, which is the separation, the L, and then little l, right?
Uh-huh.
So I have to sort of take limit L going to infinite first, right? And then find Gs as a function of x and L, and then take limit L to infinite, and then I will get Gs of x, and then I have to take limit x to infinity. I mean, there's too much to do on the lattice, and so it's not easy to get this on the lattice. You can, we have done it, and you can get it.
And that's the result.
That's the result.
Uh-huh. I think I'm still missing one thing. So this little L.
Is what?
What is, so suppose I, if I just simulate a lattice model, usually
I just simulate a lattice model, I only have this and this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I found this. And I found this function.
Yeah.
Right? I just completely found it. And I have all the computer power in the world, so I got the function exactly.
Yeah.
G as a function of L. Right? And now I can, when I once I have this function, I can calculate this. Mm-hmm. And that I did. Okay?
Do you have to assume some small lambda j of L from the beginning?
Sorry? Do I have to assume what?
Sorry, I think I asked the wrong question. So, going from g of capital L, how do you get g of little l and capital L?
How to go from here to here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, once I have this function, right? I have a bunch of points, right? Now I just take, if I take L equals 2, I take wherever L was, say 8, 16, 32, I will now take 16, 32, 64 and take the limit.
It's just L times L.
What this is just literally a product. Yeah, this is times.
Oh, it's times.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so this equation is really defining lambda j of little l.
This equation is really defined where?
Lambda j of little l.
No. This... The first eigenvalue is what gave me this.
I know.
After that, I found all the other eigenvalues using the same function.
Uh-huh.
Same function. So this, so you asked a question in during the break, if there were other operators that were relevant, what I would have found is that these eigenvalues probably go into a limit, and I have to tune those also to get to the limit. So I have to do many different couplings, you know, to get all the eigenvalues to go to a finite limit. But in QCD, the claim is that one coupling is enough and everything goes to the continuum limit.
I think I'm asking something very simple. It's simpler than what you answered. I'm just saying, now I just have one coupling. Then from that equation...
this equation.
Yeah, from that equation, I know G of L. And then by definition, I also know...
all of these.
Right. And at this step, I only know lambda j. There's another thing called lambda j of little l.
Correct. And now I say these are all the lambdas. Now I repeat the calculation, but by putting in a parameter little l.
Yeah.
And I will get a sequence of lambdas again.
Yeah, that's the definition of lambda as a function of little l.
Correct.
Okay.
That's how I calculate lambda j as a function of little l. Mm-hmm. And then I can study little l going to zero or infinite.
Thanks.
Yeah? Okay. How much time do I have? I want to sort of say one important...
20 minutes.
Okay. Okay. I want to say one important thing at least. All right. Now, what I'm going to say will have some overlap with what Christoph said yesterday. Right? Now, all of this works beautifully. And you can do this calculation. Now you can do all of this by restricting yourself to q equal to 0. You can then take q equal to 1 and do the calculation all over again, and so on and so forth. And you can appeal to random matrix theory and calculate the chiral condensate. Everything works beautifully in QCD. You get all interesting results. And in principle, if there is a conformal window in QCD, one could do it this way. This was my hope, and this is why I started working on this field, this part of my interest now. But in four dimensions, it's really difficult numerically. I mean, you have to go to, you know, there are so many issues there which make it difficult, right? And my Lattice collaboration so far has been only two or three. And two or three people will not succeed in doing this. You need 10 to 15 people to do the calculation in four dimensions. But when you go to three dimensions, at the face of it, it looks simple, right? The face of it looks simple because everything here goes through. The only difference is there is no gamma 5, because in three dimensions, you have sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3. You have used up all the matrices. You're done. So there isn't a chiral doubling, right, of the spectrum. And so the outcome of that is that this, when you write the determinant of D naught, which is determinant of 1 plus V over 2, this is not positive definite. And it's not positive definite because there is a parity anomaly.
So you're now doing QED instead
of... You can do QCD in two dimensions, in three dimensions too. Any gauge theory now in three dimensions. When you do it in three dimensions, what happens is that the instead of the determinant of 1 plus V over 2, which because of the chiral doubling was positive definite in four dimensions, now it's not. And so you say, well, what you have to then do is you have to write down a theory with determinant of 1 plus V over 2 times 1 plus V dagger over 2. So you always have even number of two components. So these sigmas are two-component polymatrices. So you have an even number of two-component fermions, and you have forced the determinants to be parity conjugate so that it's parity invariant. You had a question.
Yeah, sorry. What did you say if lambda m is 3, then there's a condensate?
Given gamma m equal to 3, why is it a condensate? So then this goes like 1 over volume when gamma m is 3. L to the fourth is the volume. And when the eigenvalues have a bound, right? Upper bound is, say, 1. Okay? So you are supposed to have a volume of eigenvalues between 0 and 1. If they are equally spaced, that's what is referred to as a condensate. Or in other words, the low-lying eigenvalues are proportional to the 1 over the volume. So you have a condensate of eigenvalues. Yeah? So that's
right. It's Banks-Kasher, basically, right?
It's Banks-Kasher. It's exactly Banks-Kasher. Right. That's right. That's right.
But from the other perspective, if I just think of the scaling dimension of Kasparov operator, and if the anomalous dimension is larger than 3/2, is there any problem?
Oh, this is four dimensions now. So what you are asking is about three. Yeah, so we need to talk about... No. Yeah. That's a good question, and that the upper critical. So the question you are asking is whether gamma m can continuously go from 0 to 3, or whether there is 0 to something and then it jumps to 3.
Basically, I'm asking what's the valid range of gamma m.
Sorry, So then I have to invoke whether the theory is unitary or not. And since a priori, every theory that I write down on the lattice is unitary, hopefully the gamma m will come out consistent with unitarity.
So what's the unitarity bound here?
In four dimensions, I don't know. Okay. Sorry. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I think in three, it is three.
Yeah, let's...
I'm sorry?
I mean, how do you write the scaling dimension of psi bar psi in terms of gamma m, precisely?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. So this will go like 1 over x to the 2 times 1 minus gamma m.
Okay, I see.
I mean, I'm just using the fact that
so then
psi bar psi d to the dx m is scaled.
Then how can it be larger?
Yeah, but
than 1?
Then gamma m should be smaller than 1, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will get the blow up
then
correlation function.
Too much.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't say anything dynamical about what the gamma m comes to. Yeah. But in three dimensions, I will have answers. We can talk about it in three dimensions.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I did not do any numerical calculation in four dimensions. Four dimensions was just a motivation for me to understand the physics. Now, three dimensions goes very easily because of that. Okay. So next, what I want to do is the issue of monopoles, right? Monopoles play a part, maybe, in three-dimensional QED, and we need to understand what that is. So, this is exactly what Christoph wrote down. So there is a nu x plus mu minus a nu of x minus a mu x plus nu, right? This is what you would call as non-compact action, right? But then I am going to say, if I say my action is e to the minus sg times some function of u, which is e to the I a mu, right? Where sg depends upon this, this is nothing but 1 over g square f square, right? Because of the fact anything you put in there, including the fermion determinant and any gauge invariant operator you're going to write down, you're going to write down as functions of u. Wilson loops, fermion correlators, Meson correlators, whatever you want, right? Then clearly I can make a change of variable, a mu going to a mu plus 2 pi n mu. Nothing will change here. F will go to F plus n, where n is basically obtained from this, right? And so in principle, I could say I could sum over all n's, provided it satisfies this condition, which is basically saying that the divergence of n is zero, right? Because I've written it as a curl of something. So the divergence of it must be zero, right? If the divergence of that is zero, then you conclude that there are no monopoles, no room for monopoles. But the theory is still u1, because every operator that I put in there is a function of u, right? So the trick to do a theory that is u1 but no monopoles is to simply insist that every operator that you calculate is a function of the compact link variable. It will automatically be u1, right? Now, why do I want to do that? Why can't I just put in, instead of that, the Wilson gauge action for the plaquette? Well, the problem is the monopoles are the kind that satisfy this strange property. And I'm probably going to end there. Maybe I can say one more thing and that's about it. So what happens when you put in a monopole? I'm not going to talk in detail about how I put in the monopole. Don't worry about it. I managed to do it by putting in a Dirac string and maybe finding the classical minimum of it, right? And if I calculate this Wilson-Dirac operator, right, what will happen? So I have to do, now there is no such thing, I have to do d dagger w dw, right? There is no gamma phi, so I can't do gamma phi times this. So this is my Hermitian operator. If I do this, and I look at the spectrum of this, and I look at it as a function of mw, probably what will happen is most of them will look like this as a function of mw, but one of them you will find does that. Yeah? What it's saying is, independent of what you pick for MW in this range, you are going to have a very, very small eigenvalue of this, right? In fact, it turns out this lambda 1 of L goes like e to the minus alpha L, where alpha depends upon MW. Yeah? So the eigenvalues on the side which is interesting for us. And why does this happen? Remember, I told you in this case, the eigenvalues, if they are physical instantons, have to go to zero. Monopoles are always, always lattice artifacts. By definition, they are singular configurations. Because they are singular configurations, your eigenvalue spectrum is always as if it's on a lattice. It never manages to go to the continuum. Yeah? This causes a headache. This causes a headache because I don't know how to define epsilon. Right? Well, technically I do, because the eigenvalue is not strictly zero. More to the point, it has nothing to do with topology. It's not robust. If I do a little perturbation, it'll get lifted. There are no exact zero eigenvalues. Nothing like that happens. The concept of chirality doesn't exist. But the concept of very, very small eigenvalues when there are monopoles exists. So because of that, technically it becomes difficult to do a simulation with monopoles. So what you do is you do the calculation without monopoles. Once you do the calculation without monopoles, you get all the results. And once you have the results, you try to put in actually, I probably wrote the equation wrong for that. That might have been 3 minus gamma m, not 2 times 1 minus gamma m, okay? Because in 3 dimensions, it's 2 minus gamma m. Yeah? Sorry, I went back a little bit to answer. Yeah. So, yeah, right. So then for this theory, you can find gamma m as a function of the number of flavors. Right? And as a function of the number of flavors, gamma m is in such a way, the theory is scale invariant for all nf greater than or equal to 2. By 2, I mean two components, the simplest or the smallest parity invariant theory that you can write down. Okay? After that, what you can do, I don't have time to talk about this. After that, what you can do is you put in a monopole in this. That means you put in an n whose divergence is not zero. And then once you put in the n for which the divergence is not zero, you try to then calculate the scaling dimension of that operator and then ask whether the monopole becomes relevant or not. We have done this calculation too, and the monopole becomes relevant if the number of flavors counting in two component flavors is less than 12. Yeah? So all of those can be done. Now, the two other remarks that I want to make about two theories, I will try to do this in 5 minutes each, is what happens in three dimensions if I want to do a single two component, right? I want to do a single two component. So one two component theory, yeah? And I'll tell you why I want to do this in a minute. I want to say the charge is 2. Yeah? So then what happens is I write down Right. So for the moment, let me write down a massive theory. Z of M is dA mu e to the minus L over L F square. The reason why I can put L over L is because I can put G square L is L over L very easily in three dimensions. It's super normalizable. I don't have to actually keep something fixed and take it to the limit. So I do that. And then let me write down 1 plus M, 1 minus M. So that's the 1 2 component charge 2. So that's the 2, right? 1 2 component charge 2 fermion. As I said, this one is not real and positive, right? But what I can do is I can multiply this these in continuum terminology amounts to putting a Chern-Simons term for charge one field, two of them, right? Instead of 1 over I over 4 pi, you have put I over 2 pi, right? Now, you can rigorously show that Z star M is Z of M, and you can also show that Z of M is Z of minus M. This is just a proof, right? Which means I know that the partition function is a real valued even function. Right? If it's a real valued even function, I can ask what happens when M is 0. And when M is 0, what happens is that, so the M equal to 0 theory, right? It turns out, like what I said in the previous lecture, that anomaly, gauge anomaly is not exactly cancelled on the lattice. The parity anomaly, which is V2A, on the lattice, right? Because this is E to the I A dA I over pi, and this is minus I over 4 pi A dA to the fourth power, right? Naively, that's what you would say, but it turns out it is not exactly cancelled. But unlike the talk on thimbles yesterday, in this particular case, as you take the continuum limit, the deviation from 1 becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. It gets closer and closer to 1. And when you take the continuum limit, parity is indeed a symmetry of the theory, and you don't have any problems. You can do the calculation. You can ask what happens when Z is M. Well, what we find is the following. So here is Z of M. Here is M. You can also show that Z of plus or minus 1 is greater than 0, right? So I can even plot log of Z of M, which is just the free energy, right? What happens is that in the continuum limit and in the infinite volume limit, it has a kink, you know, so which means there is a condensate. What you cannot show, unlike QCD, in QCD, this will monotonically increase. Here, what can happen is it can do that. It'll be symmetric. So there could be an unstable extremum where, in principle, you could define a massless theory. But I don't know what this means. Okay, it's difficult to check numerically because here the phase will not cancel because the phase will not cancel. Sign problem is an issue and one has to come up with algorithms to do this. Okay, we don't know how to do this yet. So this is only speculation. If this happens, then there is something going on there. Okay, I have a little more time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so in the last bit, I want to talk about a theory where it's not possible to take the continuum limit. In particular, all of what I said by multiplying it by L and things like that does not work. But still, it's possible to solve the theory numerically and extract physical information. Yeah? The motivation for that is QED, perturbation theory, and the result that QED for any number of flavors tends to be scale invariant. That's a numerical result, but there is convincing evidence that it is. So what we are going to do is instead of writing F square, we are going to put 1 over square root of box, where box is d mu dagger d mu. Yeah. So this is my gauge action.
Which dimension is this?
3 dimensions. Yeah. So now it's scale invariant. The action is scale invariant. And the motivation for it, this action, is that this is the induced action from fermions when you take the number of flavors to infinite. But the model I am proposing is a lattice model. Okay? Only dynamical degrees of freedom are a mu of x. No fermion determinant. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Because of the denominator, del in the denominator.
Yeah.
In lattice version, it's very long.
Yeah. Not yeah. Long. Exactly. But you know, it's quadratic, so I know how to do.
It's quadratic.
I just go into momentum space and whatever it is. Yeah, it's not a local theory. Absolutely right. Yeah. So this is not something we would have written down a priori. But I'll tell you why it's interesting posteriori. Yeah? So these are the only degrees of freedom. Again, any operator is going to be a function of now e to the iq a mu, where q is a free parameter. Yeah? Okay. I can ask the same question. Now the problem is, I have lambda j only of L. No coupling. Okay? I have lambda j as a function of L. I can simply ask, what happens to this as, this is exactly what Shailesh was asking earlier, right? Now, there is no reason why it should go like 1 over capital L. In fact, there is no such thing as for small capital L, it'll go like 1 over capital L for large. You already made this remark. It's non-local. There is no way of saying what is small, what's large, right? So I can only ask, what is lambda j as a capital? I can certainly do this calculation for all capital L and get the result, right? And it turns out, this one, interestingly, goes like what's the meaning of this gamma m of q? It's a number that I get. I know for sure gamma m of 0 is 0. because it's a free theory when Q is zero, right? It decouples. It decouples from the gauge field. That's all I know. So I get gamma as a continuous parameter. I have a lattice conformal model. No tuning needed. But there is no concept of continuum limit in this theory. The only thing, if I talk about correlators, I can talk about correlators where these are integers, right? And then I have to take limit L going to infinite. I will get G as a function of X where there are still integers. There is no such thing as saying what is X when X goes to 0. There is only 0, 1, 2, 3. But I can certainly ask, what is X when X is large? When X is large, you know, a million and million and one doesn't matter. Then you say, well, there is a continuous function. And that continuous function will again go like 2 minus gamma m of Q. Yeah? So when I calculate this, this will go like 1 over X. If asymptotically. And I have a continuous parameter of conformal field theory or scale invariant theory where I can study correlation functions.
What ask, is it true it's conformal? I mean,
it's scale invariant.
It's classically scale invariant.
It's scale invariant. You have to do a dynamical calculation to check what the correlation functions are. You have to show it is scale invariant. And it turns out to be scale invariant. You can also calculate, in this case, quantities like this. Psi bar psi at 0, psi bar psi at x. You can calculate these correlation functions. And you can get three-point functions. So we can get conformal data. We have gotten conformal data. You can get numbers. But you know, it's a numerical calculation. The more points you have, harder it is to calculate the correlation function. But you can get numbers, you can show that it deviates away from the free theory and it deviates in a certain direction, all of that. So in principle, this is a numerical way to get at conformal data for a class of theories with one free parameter. Okay, I'm done.
So, quick question on this very last part. This really looks like the large N QD3, right? I mean, if
large NF, right?
Large NF, yeah. QD3.
Yeah.
So,
why should it work?
Why is it not? I mean, why is the result not basically the large NF?
Oh, when Q is very small, it has to match with large NF. So, if in this notation that I have put in, if you put Q equals some 32 over NF or something like that, the gamma will match. But I have Q for all real numbers.
I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah?
Thanks.
Yeah. And Wilson loops, the Wilson loop correlations are non-trivial. You know, even though if you calculate one Wilson loop, it'll go like e to the Q squared. Correlations of Wilson loops exist. Correlations of three and more Wilson loops exist. So it's an interacting theory. When Q is not zero. Yeah.
Thank you. So how does your result here compare with, for example, large NF loop calculation results?
So in the numerical result, when you take NF to be 12 or things like that, it agrees with large NF. And in fact, the gamma m that you get for all NF up to NF equal to 2 agrees with a calculation by Gracie where he assumes it's remains scale invariant. So if you assume it remains scale invariant and you do higher order calculations, it tends to agree. The problem with that calculation is that you are assuming it's scale invariant. Here we are showing it as scale invariant. Yeah? So it's consistent.
And it includes the monopole operators, the scaling dimension of monopole operators?
So, no. So the theory that we have done is this one, with no monopoles, right? If you the monopoles, I told you, is hard to put in because of numerical issues. What you can do is you can just put in a one monopole anti-monopole and ask for its free energy as a function of its separation. From that, calculate the monopole dimension. Then you can ask whether monopoles become relevant or not in this theory. Yeah, that you can ask, and we did that. And it becomes relevant if counting in two-component fermions when it's less than 12.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the last part, if you do it in four dimensions, wouldn't it be...
Four dimensions?
And even higher.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if you can find some interacting conformal field theory?
So four dimensions, it's already, the action is scale invariant, right? The gauge action. So
you mean that one?
Well, in four dimensions, I don't have to do this, right?
You can have that there. I just
think if I have that, it's irrelevant.
Sorry?
It's irrelevant because the coupling becomes the opposite dimension, right? So F square in four dimensions already. I mean, the coupling constant in four dimensions is dimensionless in the ordinary Maxwell theory.
This one's non-local.
No. In the ordinary Maxwell theory,
yeah, I know.
The coupling constant is dimensionless. So why do you want to put a one over box? Already it looks scale invariant. I mean, that's the whole point about QCD, right? That's the $1 million question or whatever. In QCD, it's already scale invariant classically.
I'm asking this question because in four dimensions and higher, people don't know many examples of interacting conformal field theory. But now you have this way of defining.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do this for QED in four dimensions.
Yeah.
I have not tried it. I don't know what the answer is.
Mm.
Yeah. I suspect it won't be relevant, but I'm not sure.
So you are dividing some derivative. It makes it more relevant.
No, I did this. I did this to have no coupling constant in front. This made this dimensionless in three dimensions.
Yeah, but in higher dimensions, I mean, having that compared to not having that makes it more relevant. Without that, in four dimensions, the Maxwell action is already marginal.
Yeah. But if you have that,
it will be relevant.
Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This gauge action in three dimensions, if you take it literally, does the photon have a gap?
No.
I see.
No. So this is not like the mass induced by the Chern-Simons term.
Okay.
It's just non-local, that's all.
So there is a velocity of light, finite, and thank you.
Rajamani, I'm not quite sure I understood actually. So the message for about QED3, your message, my understanding would be that it is that essentially for any number of flavors, it is actually scale invariant.
Parity invariant. But one two-component flavor is not.
Okay. Only that. Above that, it is always.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do three.
Yeah, yeah.
Three. I did not do three because three, again, would have a parity issue.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, it is scale invariant, but I did not check it. Mm-hmm. So I did two for every even flavor
even.
And one.
Okay.
Yeah, and one is not scale invariant. But that's the point I was making. One is not scale invariant in the sense it has a kink here. So the slope is different. But what if there is a point there and then you would say you put in that mass, that's a critical mass, and there it is massless. But I don't quite understand what that even means. Yeah?
And when you say one, you mean one, two component.
One, two component. So I don't know if there is a way of putting in a mass for one two-component fermion, a lattice mass, such that it's massless. It's scale invariant. That I don't know the answer to. I know if you leave it massless, that theory breaks the scale. Yeah? But it's ill-defined, right?
I mean, normally you have to put it some Pauli Willis term in to regulate that theory, or for you break gauge invariance, right? That's the normal continuum.
Yeah. But that I took care of by exactly. That is this. The polyvillars gives the Chern-Simons and cancels it. Yeah. yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, right. Yeah.
I just wanted to make
a
non-physics remark, if I may. I mean, we are living in the world of virtual reality. Sometimes I thought that's more real than yourself. Because it's so clear.
You know, I wish this was there in the lecture halls where I teach, because students tell me when I write on the board that it's too small when they are sitting way back. They all want to sit way back there so they can read their cell phone. But at the same time, once in a while, they want to see what I wrote. Particularly when I say this is important, it's going to come in the test, they need to take a picture and they're not able to take a picture. So that would help. They can take a picture of that and no problem. Yes.
A question. So when we talk about the relevance of monopoles,
yeah,
you say that the magic number seems to be 12, two components.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really mean, you put one monopole and essentially check its
scaling dimension.
Right?
Yeah.
So I mean, so this would not necessarily imply that if I would put many monopoles and let them move around, that I would get the same answer.
That's absolutely correct, Igor. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, so one of the problems that exists, you know, when this overlap fermions came up, everybody said, oh, it has the epsilon function. You cannot do anything numerical. Then people came up with approximations of the epsilon function. You know, Chebyshev did it over 150 years ago. But the problem is you always have to say the a spectrum of the Wilson fermion is gapped. If the spectrum of the Wilson fermion is gapped, then you can make an approximation into. But with monopoles, the spectrum of the Wilson fermion is not gapped. And I don't understand this. Maybe you do. There is a continuum calculation by, I think, Jakob Schneer, who does this in the continuum and argues that if you take a Dirac fermion with a negative mass, you have zero modes. So,
can't help you there.
Yeah. So I've seen this.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But I've not followed the details. So I don't understand why that happens. I mean, on the one hand, I understand because monopoles, you know, if you put the monopole on the lattice, the link variables never go to one, right? Even if you take the lattice bigger and bigger and bigger, the monopole always is localized at the site. And so, and the monopole current is basically going around one plaquette. And that's the reason why this happens. Okay, having said that, I didn't answer your question as to how are you going to do this. So even if you, in three dimensions, you don't have to do overlap fermions. You can do Wilson fermions and get away with it. Okay, what if you decide to do Wilson fermions? Well, the problem is going to be, what do you mean by zero Wilson mass then? Zero Wilson mass, if you ignore the effect of monopoles, I know what to do. But if I don't ignore the effect of monopoles, I don't know what the effect of putting in, you know, moving the Wilson mass a little bit is, whether physics depends upon that or not, I don't know. And particularly when I have a finite density of monopoles, I'm going to have a finite number of those eigenvalues, and that's all might depend on, only that might determine the physics, none of the others, right? Then I don't know how to do that, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. There are no further questions. Let's thank Rajamani again.